This is the Artworks Alliance podcast, where we discuss the value and transformative potential of participatory art. Hello, it is Tuesday the 29th of April. I'm Rob Watson and this is an Artworks Alliance podcast. And today I'm joined by Anna Taylor from In Situ Arts. How are you, Anna?
Hello, I'm good, thank you.
Okay, and what's the weather like? Where are you based and what's the weather like?
I'm based in Todmorden, although In Situ is based in Pendle, and the weather's looking lovely. It's a really warm day.
Where's Todmorden? I can't even say the name. Todmorden, where's that?
Todmorden is in West Yorkshire, so it's in between Leeds and Manchester.
Right, and yeah. Unbelievably at the moment, we've got kind of fairly good weather everywhere, so... That's handy. And we'll be outside rather than stuck inside recording podcasts. So Absolutely. Do you want to tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So, I've been working with In Situ for about 7 years. And I've, joined In Situ with a real interest in their alternative way of organising. And prior to that, I was working in various arts organisations as kind of doing freelance communications work and also working on my own art practice. And I joined In Situ in 2018 in a marketing and comms role, but over time that's really shifted into something completely different. And so we all think of ourselves as co-directors at In Situ because we have a flat organizational structure, which I'll talk about later. And I suppose the comms has really shifted towards more of a reflective practice. So I think, the work that I'm doing is really holding space for a lot of exploration. And then alongside that, I'm a mum with three teenage children. So that presents some juggling challenges. And I've grown up in Suffolk and I've gradually migrated north. And I'm currently living and working between Yorkshire and Lancashire.
So you've used the phrase then, holding a space. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, okay. So holding a space, I think, is really about, rather than defining some really set parameters that are about what your intentions are and what you want to get out of something, it's really just creating a space in which others can come into something and define those terms themselves while they're going along. So holding space as a kind of as a facilitator will involve facilitation in the moment, maybe, or enabling others to facilitate their own activity or conversation, and just acting like a container for whatever's going to emerge. I suppose it's prioritizing what might come forth.
Emerging. Do you find that does that come naturally to you, or have you had to learn that through an instinctive or intuitive thing, or is it something that you've pieced together from different methodologies? Where does it come from for you, that holding that space?
That's a good question, because I think it's both. I think I'm both uncomfortable with it and it also comes intuitively, if that makes sense. And I suppose it's that sense that what I feel, it's like the difference between what's coming forth through me that I feel I need to do to bring value, and then all the discomfort that you have around letting go of outcomes and how you think something's going to go and that kind of thing. So I'd say that there's a tension in it, and I think it's most exciting when you're working in that tension.
Because that's kind of really difficult to explain to people, isn't it? You know, this is where when you've got something which is intuitive like that and it's kind of felt, it's explaining to people who need the structure and need the evidence and things like that, that's kind of a challenge to cross. I was just wondering, you kind of cross the two, you kind of, well, you know, kind of which one are we today kind of thing. It can be a bit of a problem. Why is it important for let's get back down to the very basics of this in terms of, I suppose, what do you call it? Community arts, participatory arts? What's the terminology that you use, and why is that important?
Okay, So I think at in situ, we're quite reluctant to arrive at one form of terminology. So there's always different things that float around at different times, either within the team or when we're speaking to people externally. I think, yeah, things like community arts, participatory arts, social engaged art practice, they're all things that we're aware of, and we know that these in some ways describe what we do, but I think we're kind of reluctant to align ourselves fully with any of these things, in that sense that what we're really prioritizing is something emergent that doesn't really have set parameters, yet we see characteristics in all of these terms that we recognize. And sometimes, depending on the project or the people that we're working with or the particular dynamics, definitions might shift. So we're not always one doing one thing.
You've used a phrase which is close to my heart at the moment, which is that idea of emergence. What do you understand by that? It's because it's different than kind of, it's a bit like, I'm trying to think of an analogy. If you scatter some seeds onto a bit of ground and you kind of don't know what those seeds are, and you're waiting to see how they might, something might come out, it's different than being very, if you like, methodologically rigorous to specifically plant something for a crop, if you like, which you have the aim of selling at the end of the day. It's how do you view that process of emergence?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, or for myself, the process of emergence is a challenging area in which you can't predefine outcomes. And you're basically, I like your analogy of the seeds. You're sowing the seeds of kind of possibility and seeing where they're going to land, and then going with what comes forth. So it's building enough spaciousness into your program, into your planning, to be able to contain what you've kind of enabled to come into being, and it's looking for things that are in alignment that are coming from that, and continuing to kind of challenge that. But I think in emergence there's also a lot of collisions that happen, because you're not always sowing. Yeah, you're sowing all kinds of things. And sometimes you're aligning and you can continue to build and really nurture those things. And sometimes you're really creating collisions and you have to work in that tension as well. So I think for in situ, what emergence means isn't just the real positive things that kind of grow and bloom, but it's also operating in a tension. And I think that's what makes the practice really relevant. Is the discomfort that we experience as practitioners, as an organization, of trying to grow and nurture stuff in a space of tension where there's a difference of opinion, there's difference of ways of working, there's total difference of ideology. That is the space that we're working in.
Well, let's explore this. Was one other thing before we do get into that, it is about, because to sow the seeds in a place. And so what does that mean? In situ means in place, I think. How important is that element of place-based, or what's the language that you use to placeness? Is that a word?
It is now. I think, yeah, the idea of sowing seeds in a place is an interesting one, because what right do you have to arrive in a place and start sowing seeds there? So really, we think about this a lot. In situ is made up of people who live and work in the place. It was founded by three artists who were living and working in Pendle, wanting to respond to people, place and culture in that very hyperlocal context, and wanting to commit to it over time. So in situ's been running for about 12, 13 years, I forget which year we're in, it's about a real long-term relationship to place. I've come into in situ as somebody who doesn't have a relationship to that context, I visited Briarfield, the town that our building's in, for the first time when I came for my interview. So there's always been a question for me about what my relationship is to the people and the place, given that, you know, I'm a visitor in the area. And I think this sense of hosting and being hosted has been a really important idea for me. And I think something that I noticed very early on in my work with In Situ was it felt that the organization was being hosted by the people in that context, as well as In Situ hosting people at its activities or, you know, artist projects and things. So that sense of reciprocity between the organization and the place feels really essential to the way of working. And it's therefore about really nurturing what exists rather than coming in as an outsider and starting to spread seeds that, you know, don't necessarily have a place there yet or something like that. Yeah, it's really, I suppose, discovering what the seeds are that are available, that are already there, that need kind of help with scattering, and they need watering, and we need to make the ground fertile for them. At some point, this analogy is going to run out of momentum.
Oh no, we can keep the analogies running. I'm very good at that. You know, what one of the things that tension is really interesting. We have an awful, considerable amount of UK government focus on the globalized creative industries and the UK's role within that at the moment, and I think it's potentially, personal view is, it's much to the detriment of our local cultural investment. And that we have to be really careful, and we have to perhaps remind, this is why a voice for Artworks Alliance is important. We have to remind our, you know, strategic support organisations and the Arts Council and the government that place and locality have a specific set of needs which cannot be conflated into the globalised media economy. So we're not here to provide a content pipeline for Netflix, Amazon and Disney, in that sense. We're here to do things for ourselves and of ourselves and by ourselves. So that place element, it can become a bit of a cliche in a way, can't it? Because it's like the word community, you know, it's like it's used, but nobody really knows what it means. So having explorations in practice to define what that is. And I think Catherine Wheeler talks about this with the stove in Scotland. And it's that element of actually you have to figure out how this works by doing it. Describe a little bit about the kind of creative practice that you and your colleagues engage in and how you think that relates to that sense of place and sense of identity that goes with that.
I'll just think about that for a moment.
I always ask the good, the hard questions. It's kind of if what would be the point in asking a question that we know the answer to? That's my motto.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
It's emergent thoughts.
Yeah. I think the creative industries, as I think of it, really relates to a time like when I was at university, so the late kind of 90s, and I was in Sheffield actually then, which is an excellent example of the creative industries with the creative industries quarter that was kind of being built at that time and spoken about. And it's interesting actually to see in Sheffield how over the last kind of 30 years, there's been such a shift towards more socially engaged and artist-led projects that sit outside of that model. I think I really relate that kind of thinking to a more, yeah, kind of capitalist framework of growth. And I suppose in arts projects, that looks like funding for a lot of capital investment. And it provides funding for set projects that have outcomes attached to them. And yeah, that relates to government agenda about things like well-being or economic growth. And I think what In Situ has set out to do from the beginning is to really challenge that sense of what does it mean when an artist drops into a town and starts doing something with the people that live there? Who's inviting that artist in? Why are they here? What happens when they leave? And I think the main job that In Situ does, which we describe as our embedded practice, is to sustain the relationship with the people that live in the place and then invite artists into that ongoing context. So the, if you like, the participation or the relationship is the thing that comes first, and then artists come into that to enhance, to uncover, to help people explore, to think about possibility, and to provide, you know, something that shouldn't really be a responsibility of artists, but in response to the times, you know, make provision for the needs that are emerging in those places, and support people to towards being empowered to do those things and to speak out about those needs.
I did a podcast with a community radio station I'm involved in, Soar Sound. So it's on their website. In Leicester on over the weekend, there was an event celebrating the Roman history of Leicester. And there was a French arts organization that does this thing over Europe where they build a Roman temple out of cardboard boxes. And there's lots of tape and building, and children are involved doing it. It's really great. It was fantastic. And I asked one of the colleagues of the artist, whose name escapes me, you know, what's the benefit for the children? And he said, I don't know. I can tell you what the benefit is for me. And I thought that was a refreshing change of this idea of the artist-led. It's like, it's fascinating. I think that what we mean by artist-led is actually what we actually have in place as a bureaucratic system for managing the creative cultural infrastructure is bureaucratic-led. Not artist led. How do you manage that in and how do you know you've got the balance right in your work between maintaining that sense of social purpose which you're committed to or you have in mind, but then also if the artist comes along and says, "I reject all of this," you know, this is, we need to be thinking beyond this. How do we transform people's expectations to? I mean, this is a very difficult question to answer. I'm absolutely aware of that. But how do we, you know, empower that artist-led impulse, which is incredibly important because there's artists that we still look at today, which we, from 200 or 300 years ago, and you know, that we don't yet understand because they followed something which is an artistic impulse, which we then can't put into our neat square peg holes that we're looking for. All the time. Does that make sense as a question?
It does make sense. I'm going to break it down. So you mentioned what do you do with an artist who's coming in with an impulse to, and they want to transform expectation within that place. So initially to speak to that, I would say that at In Situ, we're thinking less about transforming expectations in a sense, because I think that idea of raising aspiration is really dangerous. And I think a lot of projects that are participatory and that are artist-led have been about and still are about raising people's aspirations. And I think In Situ is very interested in working with people as they are, working in a place as it is, rather than, you know, sending in a message that this isn't good enough, where you're at just really isn't, you know, where you should be. So that's a baseline for us, is to work with people and place as it is, as they are, and inviting artists into that to help empower people further, rather than doing a top-down job on people or place. So I think it's about really encouraging ground-up work. And I think there's artists who are really skilled at doing that, and there's artists who are really not suited to doing that. And we're starting to learn the difference. It's not always clear cut at the beginning. But I think something else about being artist-led. So In Situ was established by three artists, or two artists and a creative practitioner. The way that it's evolved, In Situ used to describe itself as being artist-led. And then there was a point around the point where we got MPO kind of status and funding and, you know, new members of the team, including myself, started to come into the mix, where we thought actually artist-led isn't really accurately describing what we're trying to do here. Because where does the community sit in the leading of this? This isn't artist-led. This is kind of maybe artist-enabled, but then also what about interdisciplinary working? It's not just about artists. It's artists in dialogue with other practitioners, with other sectors. It's everybody in dialogue. You know, it's local authority, it's people on the team, and it's tons of different people who live in the area. So I think we really dropped that sense of artist-led to describe what we're doing now, because I think what we're moving strongly towards is a sense of building a team that isn't made up of artists and arts professionals, but a team that really reflects the place that we're working in. But yeah, with a few people like myself who are in the mix as well, but in a role where we're really thinking about how to support a ground up voice and something that is really authentically coming from people who live somewhere. So coming back to that sense of holding space, that means often laying aside our artists' kind of expectations about a place or what we think is interesting or what have you. And there's a lot of letting go, I think, that has to happen. That I think this practice involves a lot of self-awareness, and that is a big challenge of the practice, I think. It's something that can be quite exhausting at times, especially as I'm working on the team as a, you know, somebody with neurodiversity, you know, the ongoing kind of challenges of kind of being aware of yourself. It's challenging, but I need to be recentered with this conversation now.
Yes. This is why I like conversations. I think podcasts are good for this kind of thing. The Raymond Williams famously said, and one of the principles I follow is to democratize our media, you have to deprofessionalize it.
Yeah.
And the expectations about professional, because I'm going to ask you a question, which is, well, okay, what is an artist? Because I think there's still something that we have to retain about what art is and what artists are and what they do, which is separate from what, as was raised recently, was about Wigmore Hall in London, which is kind of said, well, we're no longer taking on Arts Council funding because they're asking us to be social workers. And we do a particular form of what you might describe as elite arts or specialist arts and artists, and we will have more freedom and they can get more sponsorship funding directly to do that. That's great. But there is a danger of losing in the free, it becomes a bit of a free for all that. The creative worker or the creative practitioner is kind of, it becomes interchangeable for what we mean by artist. And that, you know, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't or should privilege the role of the artist, but there has to be some kind of clear distinction between the two. Is that what is a creative practitioner and what is an artist? Actually, and maybe it's like circling each other. It's maybe something like that, but they're distinct, but they're intermixed in a way. And if we lose that term, we lose something from the centre of what we do, that arts are important. How do we explain that to people, and how do we keep hold of that essential principle, but at the same time reconfigure our sense of what that professionalized structure is around it? That supports those activities. So that democratization of practice, and I think the emphasis on cultural democracy is something that we've lost sight of. And that the justification for, you know, social solidarity through expression, creative expression, whether you call yourself an artist in that or not, is something that we really need to be thinking about. Does that, how does that fit with the work in In Situ?
Yeah. Yes, we can speak to that. I think, and I think we work in that grey area. So that is, we need to revel in being in that grey area of not knowing. So I think if we are to dismantle the things, the systems that are going against cultural democracy, then we need to be comfortable with not defining things. And we need to be comfortable with letting go of binary distinctions like artist and non-artist. The question is, how do we kind of advocate for the value of art if we can't say for sure what it is? And I suppose that, yeah, is a challenge, and it's just a tension that we're working in all the time. You ask kind of how do you explain, and I think I'm certainly interested in thinking more about moving towards listening rather than explaining. You know, increasingly in my and in our practice, because I think there's no one form of understanding. We are never going to understand one another. We are never going to understand what another person has in their head when they're trying to describe it to you. So I think all we can do is listen to the sort of all of the views, the, you know, the polyphony that's coming forward, and again, and hold that, be a container for all of that. And that's not all going to match. That's not all going to create a clear picture. But I think culturally, we need to be more comfortable with looking at that sort of dissonance and that just being okay. And then when it comes to the sort of professionalization of artists, that is one, that is a kind of construct of what an artist is, that doesn't go back so far historically. Yeah, we've got a sense of what an artist is that's based on a very particular model. And I think rather than our job being about saying who is and isn't that, just thinking about what are the things that we are seeing that resonate with that, and thinking also about also using terms like imagination and creativity. But yeah, I think it's all about, if we think of all people as having a right to art and culture, all people have creativity, imagination in them, and all people are spiritual, kind of are spiritual beings, and all of this kind of combined means we're all capable of bringing these things forth in different ways that might be artistic. I think it's looking at what is emerging that feels like it resonates with others and with the time, and then just working with that rather than getting stuck on defining what it is or isn't. And again, I suppose that speaks to emergence. Having said that, I think there are particular times in In Situ's program where we will very intentionally commission an artist to create an artwork. So for example, a couple of years ago, we worked with Eva Sajovic, who is an artist working in textiles and with wool on a hacked knitting machine. And she created enormous kind of pillars like the Acropolis on a knitting machine that were sound activated, and that kind of when you touch them, they emitted kind of stories and sounds from place. But the piece was very much to do with collapse of empire. It was called End of Empire. Yeah, that was a quite an unusual thing for In Situ to commission a piece of work like that that now exists in the world. And it was amazing, and it inspired a lot of people, and it prompted a lot of discussion, and it's just a real standout project for us. But we're much more used to working in ways that are quite invisible, that don't lead to an outcome, that don't lead to a thing existing in the world. And I think it's interesting to see the relationship between the two, because I think Eva was bringing her own practice and her own, yeah, and kind of leading what that was going to be like. But it was a genuine collaboration between Eva and In Situ, And what In Situ were able to bring into that was a whole long-term embedded context that meant that the work was really relevant, that meant that the work was very relevant to the people that live in Nelson, and featured, not just featured the voices of people in a way that felt kind of extractive, but that they were genuinely part of creating this thing that couldn't have existed without them. So yeah, I think there's a sense of both being really valuable, both being important, and working in a, yeah, in a town like Nelson that doesn't have a lot of arts infrastructure, to be able to bring in things that people can come and see and have cause for celebration around, and that can really inspire people's imagination, is really essential. That just brings joy to a place. And that feels really, really important and really necessary. And also, in working long term with, say, groups of young people or groups of mums, or I don't know, all sorts of different people. We're always taking people on trips to cities to go and see exhibitions, and, you know, taking a bus of people to, I don't know, the Whitworth regularly or something like that. And that also feels a really important part of what we do, to enable access to the work of artists. But at the same time, I think we're inviting a space for people to think, well, hang on a minute, am I an artist? What we've noticed over time through working with people is that a lot of people are thinking, all right, I value the work I do in a different way. So an example for that is, there's a group that we've worked with about 10 years or more called Mums to Mums. So the Mums to Mums are a group of mainly Pakistani Muslim women who have grown up in Nelson from being kind of, yeah, young children. And they are a really tight group of women. They have come together, yeah, through childhood, and also as a group of parents with kids at a high school that we do a lot of work in. And they, I think some of their initial projects included the Suzanne Lacey major project that happened in Briarfield Mill, which is connected to the site that we're based on. So over time, working on artist projects within situ, the mums have gone from feeling that they had no relationship to art and artists, to through involvement on tons of different projects and outings and different experiences, they have come to the view that they themselves are artists, and they say art is life. You know, art is everything. It's all the things. It's when we're cooking in our homes, when we're decorating our homes, when we're putting our makeup on, the way that we connect with one another, the way that we connect with nature, our faith, our spirituality, we see all of this as art. So I think we need to be able to hold a space for that and what I'd previously described, and not get too caught up on what's the difference, I think.
You've described it incredibly well. I think the model, I think the problem we've got is the creative industries model really needs to be kind of let go of. It's a few management consultants who, industrial development consultants who want to kind of perpetuate this. And the rest of us are, if you like, just getting on with our lives. And we want to enrich our lives and have cultural opportunities, however that is expressed. It's that cultivation of, I use the word in, you know, deliberately, folk culture, which is unfashionable to talk about these days, but that which emerges from the people, if you like, it's having a focus and I think as well, from what you're saying, it's, you know, we should never, often you're right, you know, I think you said this earlier, that we often talk down, you know, it's often about arts policy is about talking down to people, and as if they can't grasp as if ordinary people can't grasp difficult concepts. And that's kind of so patronizing in the sense that actually often people are further ahead than ourselves, as you know, it's like we and are able to deal with and comprehend quite challenging, difficult topics, given the right culture and environments, you know, the environment for those discussions to take place. So the question I'm getting to is that process of emergence that you describe, where you're holding that tension and that dialogue needs to take place. What do you have tips and kind of advice that you give to other organizations and other people working in this area to say, this is how you facilitate and manage this, so it isn't a free-for-all, and it isn't dominated by typical types of voices that often dominate these conversations, and it isn't hierarchical and professionalized, looking down on the masses kind of thing, or it isn't turned into, it doesn't then have to be turned into a business plan for a, you know, for some of these commercial projects that they want to scale up and all that kind of thing. How are you managing that emergent space?
So conversations form a large part of the work that we do in different forms. So we work with an artist-led organization in London called The People Speak, and they have developed a table, a donut-shaped table, and a process for conversations that they call Talkie-Oki. So a facilitator sits in the center of the table with a mic, and anyone who comes around the table can determine what the group are going to talk about. And it's just a shifting thing. People get up and leave, new people come. And the training for the person in the center is very much about being completely neutral, not having their own opinion, and just facilitating and drawing out this conversation. So in situ have worked with that for a really long time, and we really, really enjoy the open-endedness of that, what can come forth. People, it will often get down to things that are really essential that need to be talked about in a place. But at the same time, our local borough council also sees the value of the Talkie-Oki table as public consultation, and will commission in situ to hold conversations. So, you know, that enables us to do this activity more, but we have to push back a bit around this idea of consultation and to think more about listening in a way that empowers the person speaking rather than extracting ideas from people while they're talking. So, so that's one example. We all use a lot of coaching methodology and in the work that we're doing, again, with the belief that people have within them the answer to the thing that they're talking about. Often people need to be heard in order to feel safe and to be able to connect and listen to others. So I think we really prioritize that. There's a program that I work on called Thinking Out Loud, and there are various different forms of conversations within that. But what I really enjoy there is a sense of individuals forming part of a collective, kind of polyphonic dialogue about things. And I think as a facilitator of that in particular, my experience is to constantly have awareness of how I'm relating to what's going on, constantly thinking about the dynamic, about power balance, and also to be very aware of mainstream margin sort of dynamics, both in the room and between us as an organization and the people that we've invited around the table. So constantly aware of our power as an organization and how it's important that we're listening to people in the position of less power and creating a space for a bit of a switch. So, you know, the mainstream are learning, the margin is becoming empowered. And that's really the dynamic that needs to happen in these kind of conversations, but which can easily fall into something extractive that can serve the organization, the council, a particular artist on a project. Just being very, very mindful of what our relationship is to whatever is emerging. I think our code of ethics really guides us around that. So early on in the in the beginnings of In Situ, one of the founding artists, Kerry Morrison, established a code of ethics. Well, I think it was co-written by the three of them, but we still work to that now. It's been slightly revised, but we find this a really, really useful guide in our practice, and it speaks to working ethically as an organization in place, working with nature, working with participants, kind of working responsibly and ethically as artists. And I think, yeah, having that and having that thing that you can regularly check back on and use when you're planning something feels, yeah, really, really useful. So I'd recommend exploring that.
The work I do with community media is, yeah, having that principle of allowing people to speak, not allowing, the language is always, you jump into these words that you use, which you've kind of inherited, and it's like inspiring people or facilitating people. And often this comes down to, and this is where the emergence process is really essential, a thing, and understanding this is, what is thinking? And often when you can speak with somebody who's never been given the opportunity to think out loud before. And I'm a big follower of this Marie-Louise von France, who's a colleague of Carl Jung. And she asks this question, there's a video online where she asks this question. She says, what's the hardest question to ask anybody? It's, what do you think? And it's so difficult. And you've got to, thinking is this process of gathering something from your unconscious to put it into a form of words. And it's like a process of evaporation, it's like a mist that you kind of, as you say, it's almost like we forget this. It's like a spiritual thing. Is this what we mean by, it's a psychological thing? It's a, you know, it's a soul thing, but it's like, what is this that suddenly produces these thoughts that can give us instant clarity or, you know, mark out a position and the language that we use. And so creating that space, a creative space where people can express in language or in visual language or in movement or in music is something that because we think in terms of, we're dominated by media culture, which focuses on information exchange. And it's very transactional. I have this phrase, apologies for anybody who's, I've repeated it before, but it's a good phrase. And I think it can be used quite a lot. And please do feel free to use it, which is, most of our media tells us what we should care about. So it says, well, you should care about the environment. Okay, how do you care about the environment? Well, I watch David Attenborough programs and I see the nice pictures of penguins. And then you say, well, how do you care for the environment? And everybody says, well, I've got a pot in the yard with some plants in it, you know, some herbs. They're great. That's the start of a conversation. And you switch it from being about to for. And you say, we need to be using art, not just to be thinking about. It's, you know, we can still do that. It's still important. But rather we're looking at, and this is why the place-based model and the people-centered model is really important. So you're, through the creative process, you're asking people to think, what are you caring for here? Not just what are you caring about? Because there's lots of things in the world that we are being told that we should all care about. And I'm very much of the opinion these days that when people say to me, you should care about this, and I say, well, I don't. And that, I love this guy, this French artist, when I said, well, you know, what do you think the kids are getting from this? What do you think they benefit? I don't know. You know, it's like, I don't care. Well, what do you get from it? And he could tell me that. And I think that's a refreshing change in thinking, let's do things on the basis of what, engage with people where they are, as they are, based on what they are concerned about, which maybe they've held back from sharing. And this is a way of just opening up that process, whether it's through conversation and dialogue, whether it's through creative artistic expression. How does that make sense? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I was enjoying where you were going with that early on, and this idea of thinking out loud is very dear to me. It's the name of it's what I'm trying to create, a space or at In Situ for people to be able to bring forth whatever's coming from them. That it doesn't have to be coherent, it doesn't have to be complete, it doesn't have to be academic, it doesn't have to be correct, you know, any of this stuff, but just that space for it to kind of, and to also think about different forms of knowledge. So thinking about lived experience as equal to, if not superior to, any other forms of kind of academic knowledge or theoretical grasping or anything like that, and to think about how spirituality comes into this, and all of that coming together in a kind of melting pot. And I think part of what I'm interested in is moving people from being an individual, what do I care about, what am I working for, to how do I connect with others. And then how do we get a collective sense of what's possible? So less about individuals learning to articulate their position with clarity, but more about being prepared to enter into a collective process of just throwing things into the ring that can kind of grow and pile up.
Is there a pattern to this? Are you seeing anything that is kind of, a kind of things that emerge? And when you do this, when you listen to people and you go into a situation, and you have to do two things. I learned as a research, kind of research methodology for my PhD, was that don't just take what people say, observe what they do. Because often what people say is different from what they actually do. But there are patterns that emerge, and there are concerns, shared concerns, that change over time, and they're different in different ways in different places and according to different needs and that kind of thing. But you start to see a shape to those, there are things that recur. What have you learned from doing this and observing colleagues doing this and the people that you're working with doing this? Is there something that's emerging from, Jung would call it the collective unconscious, and there's kind of things that come out, symbols, myths, stories, archetypes that come out from these things, which we can kind of then start to make sense of. There's a structure to what we're doing. We all think we're acting independently, separately, but actually there's a collective understanding between us, because we're a society. We are embedded. I think, as Robert Keegan says, we're not individuals, we're embeduals, which is kind of weird. As individuals, we're embedded into a collective culture and a collective society. So how is there something that comes through from your observation or recollection?
Yeah, I'm enjoying that. And I think, as an artist, in my kind of personal capacity, draw a lot on kind of symbols and this kind of thinking. So I suppose when I'm setting up those conversations, I might bring something like that in as a starting point. So that might be something to do with the shape of a sphere, or a boat, or space, or the sea, or something like that, a planet. And also like to draw on fiction as a way of kind of grounding everybody and having listened to something at the start. And I think people's more kind of nuts and bolts concerns and characters and things come out in the beginning of the conversation, but as it evolves over time, there's always a sense after about an hour that people have arrived at, they've literally kind of gone on a kind of transition, and they're arriving at a sense of greater connection with one another. And I love that you're bringing Jung into this. It feels so relevant. And I always think of us, whatever kind of creative practice we're engaging in, that sense that we're all just uncovering. We're all excavating and uncovering at different points and using different tools, but we're starting to get to a sense of what's underneath. And I always have that in my mind, and I feel like that's a process that we go through in these conversations. And there's a kind of very cyclical aspect to it. So one conversation will feed onto the next. So what people have said in the previous conversation, I will kind of edit into prompts and put these. I print them on paper, fold them up, put them in a hat. And the hat gets passed around the circle. So it's a bit like the name in the hat game that you might play at Christmas or something. And people will pull out something that somebody else previously said, or sometimes it's something that they had previously said, read it out. And then we have 3 minutes of talking about this thing, and then it goes back in and the next thing happens. So there's this cyclical thing, not only in the hour that we're having the conversation, but from one to the next. And this kind of personalizing of the language. So it's very much a sense of moving from our individual positions towards something shared and a shared sense, as well as understanding that there's a lot of difference in the room as well. And you know, faith comes into this a lot. We're working with a lot of Muslim people in our community. A lot of Quakers are coming along to things, or have featured in these conversations. And yeah, but it's getting to the sense of what is going on underneath all of this that I think Jung would probably really relate to.
That analogy of digging into this. I mean, Jung was, you know, a psychologist, you know, but he was primarily an archaeologist of symbols, of culture, cultural symbols, and how they changed and worked over time. And it's kind of, we're always driven by the past and what things meant in the past and how we're dealing with them in the present. And the answer is not to cut ourselves off from that, but to explore it and to dig into it, to use, you know, that archaeological sense to find out what was, you know, what's going on and how it can be reinterpreted. And that creative, active imagination type approach is very you know, very important. So just in terms of, you know, we'll think about kind of wrapping up. I don't want to take much more of your time up, but it's I mean, we could talk for hours about these kind of things. And the, you know, where do you see this going? How do you see this kind of work? Because we don't want to, I think the mistake is to say that, can this be replicated and done elsewhere? And I think we've got to start thinking in terms of a mosaic or a patchwork and say that, you know, a friend of mine, Russell, who does, he's a follower of, a big fan of Raymond Williams, and kind of says, you know, you need a unique answer in unique places. So, you know, this being, you know, kind of, something that is valuable, based in Pendle doesn't necessarily mean that you can replicate it in Leicester or London or Edinburgh or somewhere else. Each has their own unique response. So how do you think we could maybe foster other examples of this and learn and share what works for you and in situ in your place?
I agree with the idea of the unique response, and I do think that this stuff can't be replicated. It's often down to the labor of love of individuals that enables something like this to not only to come into being but to be maintained over such a long period, and all of the people. You know, we always say in situ is kind of the sum of its parts at any given time. I think some things that might be useful for people to maybe consider from the way we work might be about our actual structure, and the way that we are really exploring what it means to build a genuinely diverse workforce, a genuinely diverse team, and the challenges that go along with that. So at In Situ, we have a flat organizational structure. We used to say it was non-hierarchical, and then that just presented so many problems. Going back to the idea of what is and what isn't, let's just call it something different. Let's call it a fluid structure. But we don't have a director. We're co-directors. We're all responsible for our own work. We all bring our skills, interests, lived experience into what we're doing. We have consensus decision making and flat pay as a baseline, and I think, yeah, the ethos behind that, I think we then extend into how we work with others. So we're exploring what that looks like in partnership with other organizations, and we're exploring what that looks like with people's assembly models, and with kind of really long-term people who live in the area who have been coming along to stuff almost a decade, you know, what that means with those people. And I think when you shift from having one person or a team of senior leaders defining what's going to happen to a very diverse group of people coming up with that and working through the challenges together that will inevitably happen when you're working in that tension without one person saying, well, this is what my vision is for what's going to happen here. I think that's when you get to do something really, really interesting and really relevant. But that's also really difficult. And I think some of the challenges that we experience around, yeah, kind of communicating the value of what we do is that so much of the work that brings value to what we're doing is invisible. Or it's the going of the extra mile with people that is never the thing that gets written on your website, you know, or gets written in the funding thing, or, you know, and I feel like that's where individuals are really essential, you know, that labor of love I was talking about of certain individuals is essential. But how do you build a sustainable organization then when those people need to move on? So how do you then write this kind of stuff into policy for an organization that it can continue to live in that way beyond the people who put the thing in motion? I think is a really, it's kind of where we're at in our thinking. And moving from being an artist-led kind of, not a collective, but kind of operating like that, to something that where we are starting to think about, okay, we're more of an institution now. We're instituting ideas that have come from a group of artists, but these are now being passed on to people who have not worked with them and who, yeah, are going to take this in their own direction. So what are the essential ingredients that we need to hold on to ensure this work remains, kind of flat, remains to be in a reciprocal relationship between the community and the organization, remains relevant, whilst giving space for whoever comes into the organization to also develop creatively within it.
You've answered so many of the questions I was going to ask then. I mean, sense making institutions, we have to think about our arts, media. I mean, this is why I think cultural democracy models are really important at the moment. About we've lost our focus on seeing the ordinary sense-making institutions that we once had. We've allowed ourselves to become, I always use this cliched phrase, which is if all you've got in your local cultural life is Primark and John Lewis, you'd really not got a very robust cultural life. And we need to have provision which is more purposeful than that. And often we've reduced our cultural institutions to the visitor economy, and they look at the footfall and they don't look at the value. And I've got two last questions for you, because we can have another conversation. One of the other things about this is moving that to that conversational model that you've described, and we have the technology now to capture those conversations. And I think it's, you're the first organization that I've really seen who is using the Talkie-Okie model and using it purposefully and getting something out of it. So that's great. So the two questions we've got is, where do people find out information about In Situ's work? But the other one is, having now become more familiar with Pendle, and it makes me want to think about maybe moving back up to the north of England. Might be I'm from Liverpool originally, and at school we learned about the Pendle witches. And so what have you learned about, the kind of mythology of Pendle yourself, that you are now beginning to, think differently than you maybe understood as an outsider, to that place? Is there something inherent in that place that is guiding, excavated and understood, those myths and those stories locally? That's a whole other podcast as well, by the way, I think.
That's a lovely question to end on. So to go with the first one, people can find out about In Situ by looking on our website. We we also just tend to work, like I said, really conversationally. We really welcome people who are interested just to get in touch. Our email addresses are on the website. We really value dialogue with people. So and usual social media things as well. We try and resist spending too much time on those things and value more personal connection. So that's how to get in touch with us or find out what we do. And with regards to local kind of folklore mythology, of course, Pendle, yeah, famous for its witches. And I think wanting to actually name that for what it is, as the systematic, you know, execution of women, is something that feels like it's something that I still really want to challenge in that place and come alongside others to really challenge. And I think the work that we do with women now, we work loads of programs at In Situ where we're specifically working with women around chronic illness, generational trauma. I feel like that really speaks to that. And I think, yeah, to be working in a place, we look out of our building onto Pendle Hill, kind of working in the legacy of that persecution of women is feels important to me and something that...
It must be a really powerful reminder that, you know, however many hundred years after that, you know, hysteria, that the symbol of the witch, that female archetype, empowered archetype, still resonates and still has power. And that kind of indicates how these things really are, after many, many hundreds of years or thousands of years, this is still one of those kind of things that carries through our culture, and we navigate, and it's an ever-present thing in our imagination, even if we don't pay constant attention to it or we think we're beyond it, we're still informed by those things.
I like inspiration. To think of the witch as an empowered woman, who's in kind of contact with the earth and
at this point I'd say a quote about from Macbeth, if I knew one other than hubble bubble toil and trouble. that's my knowledge for, you know, the further up north you go, the more pronounced the archetype of the witch figure is.
And also I think with signs of misogyny being so on the rise, as well as anti-trans sentiment, I think it's a really important time for us to be thinking about what happened there, and that just feels so relevant to now as well.
Great. Right, this has been an Artworks Alliance podcast with me, Rob Watson, and Anna Taylor from In Situ. Thank you very much for taking part in this today. We are available on most social media platforms at Artworks Alliance, and our website is artworksalliance.uk. Do think about supporting our work and maybe joining as a member. It'd be great to have more of these conversations and find out what the work is of people across the UK in participatory, community, socially informed arts. But until next time, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Artworks Alliance podcast. Find out more at artworksalliance.uk or search for us on social media, Artworks Alliance.